teeth shone as he grinned in the dark. "She will soon find out on which side her bread is buttered." "Or her gingerbread is gilded," said the Countess. "Ah, yes, how nicely put. That's the penalty for being a weatherwax woman, of course. When they get older, they start to hear the clang of the big oven door."
"I've heard she's pretty tough, though," said the Count's son. "A very sharp mind."
"Let's kill her," said the Count's daughter. "Really, Lackey dear, you can't kill everything. I don't see why not." "No, I rather like the idea of her being useful. And she sees everything in black and white. That's always a trap for the powerful. Oh, yes, a mind like that is so easily led, with a little help."
There was a whir of wings under the moonlight, and something bi-coloured landed on the Count's shoulder.
"And this," said the Count, stroking the magpie and then letting it go.
He pulled a square of white card from an inner pocket of his jacket. Its edge gleamed briefly.
"Can you believe it? Has this sort of thing ever happened before? A new world order, indeed."
"Do you have a handkerchief, sir?" said the Countess. "Give it to me, please. You have a few specks."
She dabbed at his chin and pushed the blood-stained handkerchief back into his pocket. "There," she said.
"There are other witches," said the son,
like someone turning over a mouthful that was proving rather tough to chew.
"Oh, yes, I hope we will meet them. They could be entertaining."
They climbed back into the coach. Back in the mountains, the man who had tried to rob the coach managed to get to his feet, which seemed for a moment to be caught in something. He rubbed his neck irritably and looked around for his horse, which he found standing behind some rocks a little way away. When he tried to lay a hand on the bridle, it passed straight through the leather and the horse's neck like smoke. The creature reared up and galloped madly away. It was not, the highwayman thought muzzily, going to be a good night. Well, he'd be damned if he'd lose a horse as well as some wages. Who the hell were these people? He couldn't quite remember what had happened in the carriage, but it hadn't been enjoyable. The highwayman was of that simple class of men who, having been hit by someone bigger than them, finds someone smaller than them for the purposes of retaliation. Someone else was going to suffer tonight, he vowed. He'd get another horse, at least. And on cue, he heard the sound of hoofbeats on the wind. He drew his sword and stepped out into the road.
"Stand and deliver!"
The approaching horse halted obediently a few feet away. This was not going to be such a bad night after all, he thought. It really was a magnificent creature, more of a war horse than an everyday hack. It was so pale that it shone in the light of the occasional star, and by the look of it, there was silver on its harness. The rider was heavily wrapped up against the cold.
"Your money or your life," said the highwayman.
"I'm sorry."
"Your money," said the highwayman, "or your life. Which part of this don't you understand?"
"Oh, I see. Well, I have a small amount of money."
A couple of coins landed on the frosty road. The highwayman scrabbled for them, but could not pick them up, a fact that only added to his annoyance.
"It's your life, then."
The mounted figure shook his head.
"I think not. I really do."
It pulled a long, curved stick out of a holster. The highwayman had assumed it was a lance, but now a curved blade sprang out and glittered blue along its edges.
"I must say that you have an amazing persistence of vitality," said the horseman.
It was not so much a voice, more an echo inside the head.
"If not, a presence of mind."
"Who are you?"
"I'm Death," said Death, "and I really am not here to take your money. Which part of this don't you understand?"
Something fluttered weakly at the window of the castle mews. There was no glass in the frame, just thin wooden slats to allow some passage of air. And there was a scrabbling, and then a faint pecking, and then silence. The hawks watched. Outside the window something went whoomph. Beams of brilliant light jerked across the far wall, and slowly the bars began to char. Nanny Ogg knew that while the actual party would be in the Great Hall, all the fun would be outside, in the courtyard around the big fire. Inside, it'd be all quail's eggs, goose liver jam, and little sandwiches that were four to the mouthful.